Well, good morning. This is a special edition of Fight the Empire. This is our St. Patrick's Day broadcast, and it'll be followed by a special St. Patrick's Day hour with Maura Cullen. And what you just heard was a song, Clancy Brothers Do It, and it's The Patriot Game. I believe Bob Dylan lifted that tune from one of his songs. Anyway, our guest is Con Hallinan, who is a writer and analyst for Foreign Policy in Focus. And Con Hallinan, are you there?
I am here.
Well, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you for having me.
Are you also a lecturer at UC Berkeley?
I used to be a lecturer at UC Santa Cruz. I used to run the journalism program there, but I retired in 2004.
I see. Okay. Well, you wrote some interesting articles on the Irish economic situation, and one of them was the sort of the background of, and you brought some parallels of the potato famine.
I did indeed.
So tell us what they are. One that I noticed was that the contagion came from abroad.
It did indeed. The original contagion came out of Mexico and went to Boston and then traveled in sea potatoes over to the Netherlands. And then in the spring, when the winds blow from east to west, it blew the spores over England and onto Ireland in 1845 and began the potato famine. And my analogy is that, one, the famine came from the outside. The current situation with the Irish economy, the meltdown in the Irish economy, it really has nothing to do with what 99.9% of the Irish people of themselves have been involved in. It's purely the result of a real estate speculation bubble that was fueled largely by German banks, and the consequent explosion of that bubble in the aftermath of the 2008 U.S. Wall Street meltdown has produced a debt situation, which in the case of Ireland is absolutely grotesque. I mean, I don't want to go back to the potato famine in the sense the potato famine probably killed somewhere between 1.5 and 2 million people, possibly as many as 3. No one's going to starve to death in this situation, but Ireland is going to be locked into 2 generations of austerity that it's going to have to be very difficult to pull itself out of, and none of it was caused by anything that the average Irish person did.
Well, why don't we outline some of the steps, how Ireland got into that fix? You say that it was a new member of the European Union, and it was subsidized the tune of almost 11 billion euros. What did that do to the economy?
Well, what it did was it fueled the beginning of what they call the Celtic Tiger. And when it got the subsidies from the EU, it turned around, put it into agriculture, put it into light industry, that kind of thing, infrastructure, etc. And the economy really, you know, really took off. And for the first time in, well, maybe 150 years, there was actually a negative export of people. People were not leaving Ireland. They were actually coming back to Ireland. So the economy was humming along. That had nothing to do with the speculation bubble. And that was entirely fueled by real estate speculation, which drove up the price of Irish houses 500%.
Oh, my.
It got to the level. The debt level is absolutely grotesque. If you take the current debt level of Irish banks, which is $106 billion, and you transfer that from the size of the economy, Irish economy, to say the size of the American economy, and you translate it into dollars, the debt is $10 trillion. And the fact is that Ireland is a little place. I mean, you know, people don't realize how small Ireland is. It's half the size of Alabama. You could drop 10 of them into Texas, and they'd still have room around on. It has very small economy. There is simply no way that Ireland can repay that debt back, and it's not a debt which the average Irish person had anything to do with or took part in. It was restricted to the banks, and largely German banks, and the real estate speculators, and then there's sort of a mafia of politicians and movers and shakers that set up low taxes and waived fees and all of that kind of stuff, and then they got, you know, political. They got money for running for office and all of that kind of stuff. So it was this incredibly corrupt, interchange between the banks, between the speculators and the politicians. And that's what the situation is right now. And they have asked for a bailout. They got a bailout from the European Union, and the bailout is like a reinvasion of the snakes. I mean, they're going to have to bring St. Patty back again.
Well, now
people out of there.
Ireland has they had the lowest corporate tax rate in Europe, 12.5%. Yes, and I think they want to keep that. At least the government does.
Well, what happened in this last Saturday? Ireland, the new government that came in, which is a coalition between the Fine Gael and the Labour Party, went to Brussels and asked for a reduction in the rate of in the interest rate for the loan. And the interest rate for the loan is just short of 6%. It's 5.8%, which is very, very high. And in fact, much higher than the interest rate charged to places like Iceland and Hungary. And the EU is borrowing that money at 2.6% and is turning around and charging the Irish almost 6% interest. And
so they're making money on it.
Oh, absolutely making money on it. And there's no way, I mean, any way you do it, I mean, you take all the calculators in the world, there's no way the Irish can do that. No matter how much they cut, no matter how many taxes they put on, they can't repay that. So they went before the EU, and they asked for a reduction in the interest rate. Greece did at the same time as well. And the EU came back with, well, okay, if you institute more austerity, and in a moment I'll talk about how bad it is right now, and you lower your and you raise your corporate tax rate, which is really the last kind of little bastion of economy that Ireland has, and if you and they would lower the interest rate 1 point, in other words, from 5.8% to 4.8%, which is, you know, what Tony Soprano would charge him, and the Irish refused. So at this point, it's up in the air. The Greeks took the deal, and I think the Greeks are going to find that it's probably a very bad idea, and I think there are going to be more and more massive demonstrations in Greece. I think it's going to be a long, hot summer.
Now, apparently, Iceland did not take the deal, and they're doing okay.
They did fine, and what they did was they not only didn't take the deal, they said, look, they did what Argentina did, back in 2002. They just said, enough. We're not doing this anymore. We've paid off the debt. We are paying off the interest now. Here's what we're going to offer you. Take it or leave it. Or we'll just declare bankruptcy. And, of course, the banks didn't have any choice. They had to take it. And I think Ireland is going to eventually be in the same position, although at this point the new government is saying that they're going to support the bailout. They voted for the bailout in the previous government. The Fianna Fáil government, the Fianna Fáil Green government, bought in the bailout, and Labour and Fine Gael voted for it. The only people who voted against the bail was Sinn Féin, and you were playing the Cansley Brothers song. Well, that's Brendan Behan's song that he wrote for the Irish Republican Army. Sinn Féin is the above-ground political arm of the Irish Republican Army. So the two are closely linked there.
Well, let's sort of sum up what happened in the past. The way I understand it now is that all these speculators came in. You know, I mean, when you speculate, you run the risk of losing your money. So they went in there and they bought up Irish real estate. And then when the bubble burst, they were reimbursed, apparently, by the banks that they borrowed from. How did that work? They were reimbursed by somebody.
Well, I mean, this is like, you know, you run a Ponzi scheme, except you don't go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
What they did is the speculators came in, and they did grotesque things. You know, they built these vast housing developments way out in the countryside that have never been lived in. And now they're deserted. You know, and they're overgrown with grass, and there are horses wandering on the lawns and all of this kind of stuff. A little bit like what it looked like in, say, 1868 at the end of the potato famine, when there was this huge depopulation. So they had all of these completely unlived-in places. And the people who did that speculation, first of all, they got all their fees waived by the politicians, so they didn't pay any fees or anything like that. And then they're getting bailed out. So the only people that are suffering are the people who had nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
The personal income has declined 20%. Unemployment is at 14%, but it's like 25 to 30% among young people. They have raised taxes, taxes on the income of working people, 41%. They cut the minimum wage. They raised tuition for school. They basically disemboweled social services. You know, they have just literally gone from the Celtic tiger to the Iron Age, or, you know, maybe the Stone Age by the time they finish here. And the people who are bearing this are normal, everyday Irish people who didn't get in.
Mm-hmm.
On any of this whatsoever. There is one little parallel here. You know, during the potato famine, and there was massive starvation, particularly in 46 and 47. There was this massive starvation. At the time it was going on, Ireland was continuing to export thousands of tons of grains and dairy products and meat products, pork and beef and everything like that to England, and to the landlords that they were paying the rent for, in ground which couldn't grow any more potatoes. So, you know, you have this situation where once again, you know, the speculators came in and cleaned up, and you know, the average Irish peasant is paying the bill. And I don't think this situation can hold, and the last election was kind of a sea change.
Well, yeah, the party that was in power, Fianna Fáil and the coalition with the Green Party and their prime minister, the Taoiseach, was Brian Cowan. And they were voted out. I mean, they were sort of a supposedly a center-left party, I guess, kind of like our Democrats. And
no, they were more center. More
already,
center,
even,
right.
Even more center than our Democrats, huh?
Yeah, they okay. They were, well, you know, some Democrats. They were pretty free market. Actually, the difference in politics between the two major parties, the Fianna Fáil, which was not only the party that was voted out, but that's the party which has essentially dominated Irish politics for 60 out of the last 88 years, and very closely aligned to Catholic Church. Its traditional base is small farmers and businesses and things, but it also was deeply involved in this speculation and drawing a huge amount of money from financial contributions and all that kind of stuff. And they were massacred. They were absolutely massacred. Their coalition partners, the Greens, were exterminated. They went from 6 votes to no votes. Now, the Fine Gael party that's come in, it doesn't have very much different economic politics than the Fianna Fáil. It tends to be a bit more liberal in terms of social policy, and what they've asked for is that they were proposing that they reduce this interest rate. their coalition party, the Labour Party, is probably closer to what we think of our Democrats. It's center with a left wing, too, which, and actually that left wing opposed going into a joint government with Fine Gael. They also voted for the bailout, but they want to have the speculators, the bondholders for the banks, pick up some of this bill. Where this goes, I don't know. But the real sea change here is that a slight majority of Irish voted for the two what we would think of as center-right parties, which is Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. But just slightly under a majority voted for left candidates, and they voted for the Labour Party. They voted Sinn Féin, went from 6 seats to 15 seats. Sinn Féin describes itself as a socialist organization.
Mm-hmm.
There was a new party that appeared, the United Left Party, that had, this is the first time they had run, and they went from 0 to 5 seats in the election. And then there were about 20 independents who are in various sections of the left. So if you count up, there are 166 seats in the dial, and so if you count that up, it comes to the fact that the left really has a block of people that will make it impossible for them to be ignored, and they have almost half the Irish people who voted for them. So this is a huge change. Ireland tends to be a very conservative place. It's been dominated by the Catholic Church with very conservative politics. And so this was a real, you know, this was kind of an earthquake. And I think what you're seeing is a kind of earthquake in Ireland is that, you know, it's sending waves. Maybe that's an inappropriate term to use right now. I'm thinking of the poor Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
Even here, us in Santa Cruz, you know, we got whacked in Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
Places like Portugal and Spain and Greece, even Italy, are facing very, very similar situations. And demonstrations have started up. You know, there were 200,000 people just a week ago that marched in Portugal, in Portugal's 10 major cities. There was a huge demonstration in Greece in early March of 250,000 people in Athens. So what you're seeing is, I think, that the Irish election is something that people need to pay some attention to, because I think it's going to be a harbinger for what's going to happen over the coming months, certainly the summer, and then eventually elections coming up in a lot of places in the fall. So I think, once again, maybe the Irish are a little ahead of the curve here.
Well, are there any more elections coming up in Ireland? I mean, it's so close now, but the ruling coalition has sort of basically gone along with the old bailout, and is there anything that's going to stop them?
Well, you know, the only thing that's going to stop them, I think, there are two things. One is the bailout, it can't work. In other words, if you sit down and do the math, there is no way that Ireland can repay this bank debt, no matter what they do. There's just no way to do it. So I think you're going to be in a situation of where people are not going to see anything but greater and greater and greater and greater austerity. Irish tend not to take things lying down. It's a long tradition among our people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you're going to see is, even though there isn't elections coming up, I think what you're going to see is you're going to start to see some mass pressure in Ireland. And I think what's going to happen here is that you're going to see the Labour Party essentially driven to the left. I mean, they're not going to have any choice. If they stay where they are right now, any other election in the future or by-elections, they're going to lose. So I think you maybe see the Labour Party moving to the left as well. And then you're talking about a significant block of people.
Could they form a new coalition then?
Well, they could. They could, would not be a ruling coalition. They don't have enough for enough for that, but they're getting pretty close. And it would create a situation also where Fianna Fáil would be depending on Fine Gael. That is a formula for disaster in any upcoming election, and they know it. So I think objective conditions are kind of pushing the whole situation to the left. And I don't see how you can you can avoid it. I mean, you have these debts now, and they're simply overwhelming. And, you know, Ireland is a little place. And in terms of economy, Greece is a little place. Spain is in serious trouble, and it's the fourth largest economy in Europe. It has an unemployment rate of 20%, about 35% among its youth. You had a very exact same situation happen in Spain. House prices, prices have risen 500% in Spain as well. Portugal is very close to bankruptcy at this point. Italy's in trouble. So I think what you're seeing is that this approach of trying to resolve a debt crisis through the use of austerity is just failing. It failed in Latin America in 1981, the application of the so-called Washington Consensus, which, you know, austerity, 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 and more austerity, froze those economies, crashed living standards, raised unemployment, lowered wages, and at the end of 20 years, Latin America was worse off than when it had started.
Right.
And so, and what happened in Latin America, if you recall, started with Brazil. 1987, Brazil said, we're not going to pay the debt.
Well, let's hope we don't have to wait 20 years for the...
we hope, I agree. We don't want to wait. You know, it's a whole generation. And at this point, they're projecting that 100,000 people are going to emigrate from Ireland in the next year. And, you know, that's really the trend.
Well, you know, you offer a way out with a sort of a four-step plan, you know, repudiate this pact, dump the euro and go back to an Irish currency, suspend home evictions and have a jobs bill, and then renegotiate like Argentina did.
Exactly. So I don't think there's any other... I don't think there's any other choice. And again, if you go back to that 1981 crisis in Latin America, the similarities are pretty eerie because you had a debt crisis. Again, this was a debt crisis which was brought about in that case by the fact that dictators ruled the continent pretty much and just, you know, took easy loans and loans were, you know, you could get the money for almost free. So what happened was they ran up these debts. They weren't in charge of the currency because everything was done in dollars. Then what happened is the U.S. went through a recession, and you remember the first couple of years of the Reagan administration was a very deep recession, and Americans jumped the interest rates to 20%. So all of a sudden those loans had this onerous interest rate on them. That happened at the same time as that the recession in the United States spread worldwide, so there was a crash, and they forced through this Washington Consensus, which is exactly what the EU is doing right now, and it was a complete disaster in Latin America. You know, things, small things. Cholera had disappeared for over 100 years in Latin America. One of the first things they did was they cut back on public health. Cholera is now endemic. I mean, it's back in, you know, it's there, it's back. And places like Peru and Chile and Bolivia and Ecuador, cholera has made its, you know, its reappearance. And, you know, sort of like the metaphor, a love in a time of cholera. So I think what you've got to do is to look at what the Latin American countries did, which was that they said, no, we're not going to pay any more of these debts back. You're going to have to forgive our debts, And then two, to build economies that are not reliant on the dollar, and to build economies which in which you have a lot of local industry and you protect that industry. And Brazil is the classic example of a you know, going from basket case to bulldog.
Well, it's interesting that there's a kind of an economics website called Zero Hedge, and there a writer named Tyler Durden sort of outlines a kind of a five-step plan that would do just that. He goes into detail just how to do it, you know, how to dump the euro and create an Irish sort of, he calls it an Irish euro.
Yeah.
So
you want to be able to control your own
currency. Mm-hmm.
You don't want... You don't want German bankers in charge of your currency, particularly when these German bankers are responsible for more than 50% of the debt in Ireland. And, you know, it wasn't even good for Germany, for that matter. I mean, one of the things that people think about is, well, you know, Germany's wealthy. Germany is wealthy, no question. And yet, if you take Bavaria, which is the wealthiest state in Germany, and the sort of industrial juggernaut of its export industry. In the past 10 years, figured for inflation, the wages of Bavarian workers have fallen 4.9%.
Mm.
Now, this is at a time when the banks have been registering
colossal gains.
Absolutely colossal things. So, you know, it isn't even a question of, well, poor peripheral countries like Latvia and Romania and Greece and Ireland and Portugal and everything like that, or even countries like Spain and Italy. In the heart of Europe, in the so-called virtuous countries like Germany, etc., the fact is that this growth and this growth of wealth has taken place because working people have simply been exploited more.
I mean, that's right.
That's what it is. You know, you work longer, you get lower pensions, you have a massive increase of temp hiring over Europe.
I think we're going to have to end on that sad note and hope that we can do something. I think there is a lot of stirring going on. We've been talking with Con Hallinan, a writer and analyst for Foreign Policy in Focus. This has been a special St. Patrick's Day broadcast of Fight the Empire. And thanks a lot for being with us.
Well, can I end with one thing?
One quick thing.
Okay, Patrick Pearce's poem over the grave of Jeremiah Vonnegut Rossa. I say to the masters of my people, beware. Beware of the thing that is coming. Beware of the risen people who shall take from ye that which you would not give. Okay. That's what we should end.
That's the way to go out and to go on with our struggle. Thank you very much, Con Hallinan.
Pleasure. Glad to have been here.
Okay, this has been Fight the Empire. I would like to say that today is St. Patrick's Day. Yesterday was the 8th anniversary of Rachel Corrie's heroic death in Palestine under an Israeli bulldozer. So remember Rachel Corrie on this day. Thank you very much.